This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. God gives abundant, radical mercy to those who call on Him for forgiveness. But the mercy God showed others in the past doesn't transfer down to you. And the mercy God shows you can't pass along to others after you. We're all required to respond on our own to God's offer of mercy. Today, Pastor Sam will continue a sermon titled, Mercy Spurned. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
Nahum is in our Bible to remind us that every generation must embrace the mercy of God for themselves. Every generation must experience the grace of God, the relentless grace of God, the scandalous mercy of God. Every generation must experience that for itself. My kids are not going to go to heaven on my mercy. Your kids and grandkids are not going to go to heaven because God showed mercy to you. They are going to go to heaven because God shows mercy to who? To them. And so Nahum is an important component in our book. How are we to understand this puzzling little book? When I started looking into the book of Nahum, I immediately began looking at different commentaries, and every commentary had the same basic statement. This is one of the most troubling books in the Old Testament. Oh, great. I have a whole week to figure this out. And then Wednesday comes along, and I'm like, man, I got to figure something out here. Wednesday's, you're like, for those of you who, you know, think pastors just kind of sit at home and go play golf and hang out and drink coffee. No. We are like getting our pickaxes out and our shovels and our hard hats, and we're going down into the mine that Nahum dug, going, what in the world were you thinking digging here? This makes zero sense. And all the commentaries are going, that's exactly what you should be thinking, because this is the hardest soil in the Old Testament. There's no gems in here, and we can't figure it out. And I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do with this? And then, you know, it's Thursday, and I'm like, Lord, you have got to start opening this book up, because tomorrow's Friday, and there's stuff going on this weekend. There's like weddings going on, and I can't Nahum everybody and say, well, I can't come to your wedding. Why not? Nahum. And then I got to get up on Sunday morning, and we can't have a singspiration. We already had seven of those, so we can't have another one. Correct? So what do you do with Nahum? And you know what I found out? Jonah was absolutely no help. Like, Jonah, you were so helpful in your book. What's going on? Jonah's like, that's past me. I'm gone. I'm already in the presence of the Lord. Me and the Assyrians that did get saved, we're singing praises up here. You figure it out. So you know where I found some help? I found some help from Paul. Paul in the New Testament. Who would have thought? So let me show you the help that Paul gives us. Romans 11 has a very interesting statement in verse 22. It says this, note then. In other words, Paul says, now look, everything I'm talking about, I want you to pay special attention. Note then the kindness and the severity of God. Severity toward those who have fallen, but God's kindness to you, provided you continue in his kindness. Paul says, look, you understand Nahum? You need to pay attention to two things. You need to pay attention to the kindness of God, and you need to pay attention to the severity of God. And I opened up the book of Nahum, and I read the very first line, and it's like all of a sudden Paul came right to mind. Listen to the opening line in verse 1, an oracle concerning Nineveh. An oracle concerning Nineveh, the book of the vision of Nahum of Elkosh. Now, there are a couple of words here that I think are going to be very important for us. The word oracle is a word that shows up in the Old Testament every time God is about to pronounce a sentence on somebody. It's sort of like the word woe. So whatever God is going to announce through Nahum it isn't going to be pleasant. And then secondly, it's a vision that Nahum is supposed to write down in a book. This is the only minor prophet that you see described this way. And the word vision gets us thinking about maybe the vision in Daniel 7 or maybe the book of Revelation where a prophet is given a vision of something that is yet to come. There is some great thing that God is announcing that he is going to do for his people, and it involves Nineveh, and it has to do with comfort, kindness, and it has to do with severity. You say, where do you get that? Well, it's interesting, the word Nahum comes from a word that means God comforts. Some people think it's a shortened version of the word Nehemiah, because the idea here in the word comfort is not God sort of patting people on the back and going, there, it's going to be okay. Just, I know it hurts, and so, but you know, just hang in there. That's not the idea. The idea behind comfort is that God comes alongside and strengthens. So there is something that God is putting in this book about his kindness that strengthens. But then there's the word Elkosh, and there's a whole lot of ink that has been spilled about where this is and what is this. And so I got looking in all of that, and I discovered that the word Elkosh actually means God is hard. God is severe. So right at the front end of the book, if you're kind of listening in carefully to what God is saying to us through Nahum, Paul is actually right. He's saying, I want you to pay attention to the comfort that God gives, and the comfort that God gives has to do with the severity that God is about to bring on Nineveh. And so with that in mind, I want to ask the question, how in the world do we take comfort from the severity of God? Because that's not what I expected. I mean, Jonah has already shown me about the kindness of God toward his enemies, and that was incredibly encouraging. And I think I speak for all of us this morning when I say, look, I am so thankful for the journey that we had together where Jonah was our guide, and we learned about the unbelievable mercy of God. But now Nahum is our guide, and Nahum is saying, now I want to show you the other side of God. I want you to see his severity, and you should take as much comfort and strength and joy from that as you did from what we learned in Jonah. And so how does God use the book of Nahum to strengthen us? Well, let me give you a few things quickly this morning, and we'll wrap up our time together in the book of Jonah. So here's the first thing I think that God does. He assures us in the book of Nahum that in the face of all the evil that is going on around us and maybe even to us, God will comfort his people. God comforts his afflicted people. And you can see this in the first 8 verses of the text. The Lord is a jealous and avenging God. The Lord is avenging and wrathful. This is verse 2. The Lord takes vengeance on his adversaries, and he keeps wrath for all of his enemies. The Lord is slow to anger and great in power. And the Lord will by no means clear the guilty. And then he talks about his way. And as he describes his way, he talks about the whirlwind and the storm. He rebukes the sea and makes it dry, dries up all the rivers. You remember when God did this in the past for Israel? He dried up a sea, and he used that dried seabed to carry his people to safety, and then he used the waters of that sea to drown one of the greatest enemies of God's people in the Old Testament, the Pharaoh of Egypt and all of his armies. And then do you remember when he was leading Joshua to go into the promised land and there was a great river in flood season in the way, and God dried up the river and allowed his people and the army of Israel to go across, and in a miraculous victory gave them the walled city of Jericho? And so there are allusions to things like this. And this is why at the end of verse 5, the heavens and the world who dwell in it all quake before this God. And here's the question. Who can stand before his indignation? And who can endure the heat of his anger? And the answer is no one. God comforts his people because of his character. He comforts his people because of his power, by means of his power. Nahum is going to make sure, as you think about God's comforting people, that you remember God's character, his goodness, and his righteousness. He talks about God being a jealous and avenging God, and wrathful, and he takes vengeance on his adversaries. He is slow to anger and great in power. But when that anger is finally aroused, he will by no means clear the guilty. He goes all the way back to that great text that God gave to Moses when Moses said, God, I want to know who you are. I want to understand you. And God has used his character, and he's used his power, and he's used his path faithfulness to his people to comfort them in the middle of all of the wickedness that they're enduring. And then there is a future plan that God has for his people. Look at verse 12 in the text. Thus saith the Lord, and he's now talking about the Assyrians. Though they are full of strength and many, they will be cut down. And then he talks to Israel. Though I have afflicted you, I will afflict you no more. And then look down at verse 15. Behold upon the mountains the feet of him who brings good news. The word good news there is our word gospel. Who publishes peace. Keep your feasts, O Judah. Fulfill your vows, for never again will this worthless one pass through you. He is utterly cut off. And then verse 2 of chapter 2. The Lord is restoring the majesty of Jacob as the majesty of Israel. God is comforting his afflicted people. And you know, as you serve the Lord, and as you take that path that God is showing to you that is full of fear for you, and when some of those fears actually come to pass, Nahum would say to you, now listen, in the middle of all of that, even when that involves affliction from God as he trains you up and as he disciplines you as a child, even in all of that, remember something. God comforts his afflicted people. These people that were being afflicted, Israel and Judah, were being afflicted because of their sins. If you go back to 1 Kings 17, or 2 Kings rather, 17, and you start reading, God is actually, and this is right in the middle of all of these Assyrian kings that are coming, and God's, it's like God puts everything on pause, and God says, now I want you to understand why I'm letting all of these kings in, and I'm letting them do all of these things to my people. And he comes over here, and he says, now let me tell you what's been going on in the hearts and in the lives of my people. And it's like he opens up a door, and he lets us kind of peek in to what's actually been happening in Israel. And God is saying to them, I want you to see all of the idolatry here. I want you to see all of the covenant breaking that's been going on here. I want you to see all of the rebellion that has been going generation after generation, king after king after king. I want you to see everything that they've been doing. They have been taking the children that I give them, and they have been sacrificing them to the fire god. This has been happening in Israel by my people. And I have sent to them prophet after prophet after prophet after prophet, and they would not heed the words of the prophet. They would not repent, and so I have sent to them the Assyrians to discipline them. You realize something? If you're a true child of God, if I'm a true child of God, and we resist God, God will speak to us, and God will speak to us, and God will speak to us. That's why Nahum says he is slow to what? He is slow to anger. You may be sitting here this morning and saying, well, you know, I've been engaged in this for a long time, and nothing has happened. You know why it hasn't happened? Because of God's what? Mercy. God is slow to anger. And 1 Kings 17 is a chapter in your Bible that you ought to go home and read this afternoon, and you ought to just pull out a highlighter, and you ought to just highlight all the things that you can think of in that chapter that speak to God's broken heart over what is happening in the lives of his people, and finally what he has to do. But even in the middle of the discipline, even in the middle of all of this that God is permitting to go on to discipline his children, God comforts his people. God comforts his people. I want you to notice, secondly, that God will vanquish his arrogant enemy. Look at verse 14 of chapter 1. That's the second big idea in Nahum. God comforts afflicted people even when he's doing the afflicting. But secondly, God will vanquish his arrogant enemy. The Assyrians will not carry the day. The Lord has given a commandment about you. This is verse 14. He's talking now to Assyria. God has given a commandment. No more will your name be perpetuated. From the house of your gods, I will cut off the carved image and the metal image. I will make your grave, for you are vile. Now drop down, if you will, to verse 13 of chapter 2, and notice this statement by God. Behold, I am against you. I will burn your chariots. The sword will devour your young lions, in other words, your generals. I will cut off your prey from the earth, and the voice of your messengers will no longer be heard. Look at verse 5 of chapter 3. Behold, I am against you, declares the Lord of hosts. And you may want to just underline that little word hosts and put the little English word armies next to that. This is God's going to war name. In other words, God is looking at the Assyrians that he showed mercy to 100 years earlier, and he is saying to them, you have now become the enemy of my people. You have now exalted your gods again, and I am going to vanquish you. I am against you. You say, well, man, that's Old Testament language. You remember James chapter 4? The Bible says God opposes the what? The proud. And the word opposed there is a military term that in essence shows God showing up to battle, and he brings all of his might and all of his power and all of his armies. Now, if you lived in the ancient world, in Jonah's day and in Nahum's day, there was no greater military might than Assyria. Her chariots were legendary. Her archers were world-renowned. Her generals struck fear in the heart of everybody. They literally marched through the earth and captured cities and deported people. Never until the reign of Alexander the Great was a nation so powerful as Assyria. And God says to them, I want you to know something. I am against you. It's a very fearful thing, isn't it, to find ourselves on the opposite side of God? And that's exactly what God says to us in James when he says, listen, I oppose the proud. I oppose the proud. James is writing to Christians. He's writing to believers. Nahum is writing to a pagan nation worshiping false gods. But sometimes that same general thing can happen even in our own hearts as we elevate something to the status of an idol. Jason, in his comments, reminded us that our hearts are a factory that makes what? Idols. An idol is anything that you worship more than God. It's something that is so important to you that you are willing to disobey God to get it or to keep it. That's an idol. It might be a friend. It might be a possession. It might be a pleasure. It might be something that gives you security. But whatever it is, if it matters more to you, if getting it or keeping it is worth so much to you that you are willing to disregard God, deny God, or disobey God, then you find yourself in the place where James is saying God will oppose you. And here in Nahum, we see that God will vanquish his arrogant enemies. And then notice, thirdly, that he will vindicate his honor. Look at verse 7 of chapter 1. The Lord is good. A stronghold in the day of trouble. He knows those who take refuge in him. If you've ever been over to Israel and you have been to Masada, there is a stronghold at the top of Masada. And a small group of Jewish radicals held that the group of zealots held that fortress against the entire legion of Romans for almost a year. And you get there and you're like, well, how in the world could that be? You get there and you see the mountain and you're like, oh. And then you crawl up the top. Well, actually, you don't crawl up the top unless you're crazy. And I've been crazy, so I've actually done that. But there's a much simpler way now. You just get in a cable car and you just go, and you go up there, unless it's super crowded and somebody faints, which actually happened. And then there's chaos in the car, and you're like, I should have taken the little snake trail. That's what they call it. I'm not sure why they call it the snake trail, but they do. So bottom line, you get to the top, and then there is a fortress that Herod built up there. And you're like, oh, this would be pretty tough even for the Romans. That's what God is saying here. I am a stronghold in the day of trouble, and I will acknowledge I'm intimately related to certain people, and when they seek me, I will bring them into the stronghold. And why is that? Because he is going to vanquish his enemies, but he will vindicate his honor. And he's going to do this by keeping his people safe while he exposes his rivals for what they really are. Look at verse 9 again. Who are you to plot against the Lord? He, God, will make a complete end. Trouble will not rise up a second time. Verse 11, from you came one who plotted evil against the Lord, a worthless counselor. You remember we talked about that general Rabsaqeh who came out, stood against Hezekiah and said, let me give you all some advice. And Hezekiah's guys are like, hey, listen, can we talk in your language? Because we understand Assyrian. Don't talk in Aramaic or Hebrew because all the people there will hear you. And they're like, that's why we're talking in Aramaic, because we want him to hear. And so Rabsaqeh gets up and he denigrates Hezekiah and he mocks God. And he says, don't let your God in whom you trust deceive you. And Nahum says, there is a worthless counselor who came out of you. That's exactly who he's talking about. Well, what did God do to this worthless counselor? Hezekiah took that threat, you remember? And he went to the temple and he knelt down before the Lord and he put all of this before the Lord. And that night, God sent an angel into that Assyrian army, and before the sun rose in the morning, 185,000 of the Assyrian soldiers were slaughtered. And they turned tail and they headed back to Nineveh, and by the time they got back to Nineveh, Sennacherib was in his temple worshiping his gods, and his own sons, in the very middle of his worship time, came in and slaughtered him. The might of Nineveh's army, the thickness of Nineveh's walls, the bottomless wealth of Nineveh, and even the power and the beauty of the temples in which Sennacherib worshiped weren't enough to keep him safe from a God who said, I am against you. Remember what Paul said? If God is for us, who can be what? Against us. And that brings us to the next thing I think that Nahum teaches us, and that is God will gladden the nations. God will comfort his people. He will vanquish his enemies. He will vindicate his honor, and he will gladden the nations.
Thanks, Pastor Sam. We'll conclude this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for teaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Join us for our worship service at 9:30 every Sunday morning, or connect with us online at pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is produced by the audio team at Palmetto Baptist Church, also by Ryan Ahrens and CJ Billieux. Join us again next time, so together we can grow in grace.